Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents For a Pixie in Blue by Cecilia Randell. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Prologue. 2 months earlier. Elder Shinzu gently tugged the curtain closed over the doorway leading to Bricka's sacrifice. He paused, staring at the deep blue folds of fabric as they absorbed the lamplight. He needed to report to the chief elder, but he didn't know exactly what to tell her. Bricka's glow continued to fade, there was no doubt. The questions remained. What exactly did it mean, and what could they do about it? A soft scuff of leather on stone pulled his attention to the guards at the end of the hall. They were trained from a young age to watch over his people's most precious treasure and greatest secret. Guards could sense the crystals. Could they feel the difference? Shadows moved in the corridor, and not all of them were cast by the torchlight. He shuddered as foreboding filled him. "Elder Shinzu," one of the guards stepped up beside him. "Is everything all right? Do you need assistance?" Shinzu pulled back his shoulders, straightening to his full height, though his was no match for that of the guard. He looked the young man over and raised a brow, knowing it was important to maintain his air of authority.
"Brinny, yes."
The other man bobbed his head. "Yes, Elder Shinzu."
"Resume your post, Guard Brinny."
Brinny dropped his gaze. "Yes, Elder Shinzu." He hurried back to the end of the corridor, shadows and light flickering over him, reaching. Elder Shinzu drew in a breath. He had to believe there was a way out of this situation, that Guard Levi would be successful in retrieving the crystals. Because if the fading glow of Bricka's sacrifice meant her power was also fading, the slightest upset could push the balance in Chardon's favor. And then the powers helped them, for no one else could. Chapter 1. Blue. Blue and her mini entourage gathered near the back of the inn. A small pile of bags and packs stood in the center of the group. Inside his stall, Beast kicked up a fuss, and the sound of his hooves hitting the stall door pounded through the air. Blue tensed with each blow. She'd gone to see him, wanting to say goodbye, for now only, she had told him. But her quarren had not been pleased with the presence of Philip. She had eventually convinced Philip to hang back by the entry, and Beast had settled somewhat. It had not been an easy goodbye. Beast had stood, stoic and aloof, through most of it. But when she'd tried to leave, he hadn't let her. He was protecting her again. Sadly, the situation she found herself in wasn't something her Beast could protect her from. He didn't understand, though. The last few days had been interesting. After Mawata's announcement that the Prizzoli, and therefore the Padilrian government, were demanding she accompany Philip into virtual imprisonment, her days had at first been filled with heavy silences and forced smiles. Then there had been a new development. Well, two. The wording on the official agreement with the Alliance had been changed, mitigating the harshness of the sentence. And someone had decided she and Philip were now honored guests of the Prizzoli and should be treated as such. Over the last week, she'd gotten a crash course in politics. Some of it she already knew. The Alliance of Cormant, the Ministry, the Order of Terrell. Opened worlds and closed worlds. When Mawata had first told her of these, she'd envisioned a well-oiled system, all the parts moving in set patterns, working together. That was definitely not the case. The Alliance, made up of three representatives from each member world, seemed to worry over trade rights and deals more than anything else, with Martika and Karan constantly jockeying for the upper hand. The Order, which she had assumed was a branch of the Alliance, was actually a separate entity, hired by the Alliance. If that wasn't confusing enough, The ministry operated with nearly complete autonomy when it came to the portals. It was a mess, a confusing, horrible mess, where she couldn't figure out who was in charge, and the intricacies of these moving parts continued to elude her. She wanted nothing to do with the politics of it all. Unfortunately, she couldn't avoid it. She'd become a pawn for maneuvering. She also hadn't been able to talk, really talk, with anyone, not even Forrest. The situation with Philip had left her isolated from her friends, her men, even if one of them was always in shouting distance. She was never left truly alone, but handling Philip had become a dance on a barbed wire fence. On one hand, Philip's possessiveness had only worsened as the days went by, to the point where not even Forrest could talk privately with her for long. It was as if Philip's craving for the life of others had transferred to a craving for her. On the other, he had also grown complacent, wasn't the right word, more content with his new situation. A people who truly appreciate the might and power of the crystals planned to take him in. They would celebrate him as he deserved. He would have Blue by his side, for didn't these people understand Blue needed him just as much as he needed her? And Blue knew all of this because Philip had told her, repeatedly. Philip was happy because, in his mind, he had one, finally. All of this had left her feeling lost, and she had to trust that Mawata and the others knew what they were doing. Trust that they would figure out a way to fix this. Trust her future, her very life, to them. It was one of the hardest things she had ever done. And now, well, now they were off to a reception with members of the Alliance and the Padilrian and Prezzoli leaders. It seemed the height of foolishness to her, but the idea thrilled Philip, so maybe someone more used to dealing with psycho-crazed mass murderers with god complexes had deemed this the correct course of action. She wasn't convinced. Blue stood once more between Philip and Forrest, waiting for their transportation to the reception on Padilra. Trevon, Levi, and Felix were close. Mawata stood apart with the cubs on the other side of the pile. Another thud came from the barn, and Blue flinched. Blinking, she held back the rush of tears that flooded her eyes. Her hand slipped into Forrest's, the movement slow and practiced, and not giving Philip any reason to look down. It was her only comfort right now, these stolen touches, so few and far between. Jason exited the inn, accompanied by a middle-aged woman wearing the green robes of a portal worker. The ministry had sent her to handle the transportation to Padilra. Another boom from the stables. The cubs growled, low rumbles of distress more than anger, and purely in response to Blue's own roiling emotions. As the ministry agents approached, she attempted to still her thoughts and send calm to Garfield, but failed. Finally, she just sent a plea. Forrest squeezed her hand and moved away toward the cubs. Low murmurs reached her as he attempted to soothe them.
"I know you like those little pests, but tell me again why they have to come with us."
Philip leaned in, whispering in her ear.
Luckily, Beast kicked again, and her flinch could be explained away as a reaction to that.
After a second, Blue recovered and shrugged. "They're just babies and can't be away from us for very long. If I'm going to be staying with you, they need to come too." He sighed.
"Fine, but you will be taking care of them, not me."
"Since there is no chance they would ever let you touch them, I don't think that's a problem." She didn't say the words. Philip stiffened as Jason joined Mawata near their things.
"He's coming too?"
Trevon stepped up beside her, taking Forrest's place.
"There needs to be a ministry representative," he said.
Philip nodded, accepting this, though he frowned. Surprisingly, once Philip had settled a little more, he'd begun to view Trevon as an ally of sorts. Maybe because he knew him from his time with the Xehanars?
Then he must have forgotten Trayvon had helped capture him.
It made no sense.
Of course, Philip didn't make any sense most of the time. Are you ready? The portal worker asked, her eyes wide. There should be another agent awaiting you at the Bedillion site. She swallowed, her gaze fixed on Philip. So the rumors were already going. Whatever happened to discretion?
We're ready,
Blue said. The woman tore her attention from Philip and focused on Blue. Please clear your mind. It will make this a little easier for me. Blue nodded and did her best, but the request was near impossible. In the next moment, the small yard, the stable, the woman, the gray skies over Furyk, they were all gone. Instead, she stood in a massive room, the span clear of any columns or obstructions. Ambient light filtered in through high windows along one wall, and a set of doors marched across the opposite. The transition was as smooth and startling and abrupt as it had been when Director Pirin sent her home the first time. No rumblings, no tremors, no disorientation as there had been when she herself had activated the natural portals. There's been something new this time, a kind of stretching sensation, but not physical. It was hard to describe. Philip slung his arm around her shoulders and pulled her in. Another portal worker stood before them, a young, well-built man around Jason's age. And here we go. He kept his gaze focused on the floor.
I am Jonathan. Welcome to Bedillra.
Another man, this one older, came through the center door. He came to a halt just in front of Jonathan and bowed.
Greetings. I am Counselor Jacob. If you will follow me, I will show you to the rooms where you may rest and prepare for the reception.
He spoke in common, slow enough that Blue could follow fairly well, but Trayvon murmured a low translation. The counselor, too, would not meet anyone's eyes.
Your belongings will be brought shortly.
He headed for a door on the far left, pausing briefly to be sure they all followed.
There are about 5 hours before the opening ceremony. An attendant will alert you when you must begin to prepare and offer any assistance needed.
They wound their way through the halls, the decor becoming gradually more ornate. Jonathan stopped before a door painted in subtle swirls of cream and gold.
Miss Faust, these will be your chambers. There is a connecting room as well. It is my understanding this is the living arrangement best suited.
He looked to Philip.
You will be in the next room as well as...
Felix stepped forward.
Me?
The mercenary exchanged a look with Mawata and Forrest before looking back at the counselor.
I am already prepared for the... reception, he said.
Counselor Jonathan nodded.
Very well, and your pets? They will need to be restrained. The appropriate gear will be brought.
Blue, already so far over the edge of tense that she felt like an overstretched rubber band ball, couldn't even react. Finally, she managed.
They'll need to be with Forrest or I when that happens.
Trayvon translated for her.
Actually, I would like them with me now, if you don't mind. They probably need the rest as much as I do.
This was probably a stupid move. They and Philip barely tolerated each other even now, but she was about to head off into who knew what. She needed this downtime. She needed to feel close to something, and the men were off limits. She suspected they were keeping things from her, but hadn't been able to gain a moment alone with them to find out what. Philip shot a glare at Garfield, who rumbled back at him.
Please,
Blue said, hating herself just a little for the pleading tone that slipped into her voice. After a tense few seconds, Philip shrugged.
Fine.
Blue opened the door and ushered the cubs inside the room. They leapt on the bed and circled, rumpling the covers before curling into medium-sized balls of fluff. A tendril of affection worked its way through her and to them, and Garfield let out a small meep. She looked back at the ground in the hall.
I will see you guys in a little bit, I guess.
She conjured up a smile for Philip and shut the door, breathing a sigh of temporary relief.
Chapter 2. Levi.
Guard Levi, please sit.
The chief elder gestured to the cushion across from her. Its fabric had a golden sheen laid over the green that reminded him of the plains of his home. A pang of longing drove through him for the open land. He approached, bowed, and took the indicated place, crossing his legs as was proper. When he was settled, he tilted his head forward and kept his gaze on the floor, waiting for the elder to speak. The room was empty of other people. He had been escorted to it as soon as the others had been settled in their rooms at the ministry's facility on Padilra, which served as both an embassy and trade headquarters. Sometimes the line between the alliance and ministry blurred, even for those who governed. Built on the border between the Prizzoli lands and those of the Formangi, the unclean, the corrupt, those who were not Prizzoli, the facility was both too grand and too stark. The private rooms held none of the warmth he was used to with his people, and the public spaces were overdone. He'd gotten used to the tastes of the people of Quran, he thought, but seeing these foreign things so near his home struck him as discordant, wrong. An invasion none of them could fight, and an inevitable change.
Please, be at ease.
The chief elder shifted in her chair, sitting forward just the slightest, and Levi looked up at her. She'd changed in the months he'd been gone, or he was seeing her differently after his time away. Her hair was still so pale a white it nearly glowed, but the tone had edged into cooler shades. Pulled away from her face and twisted into braids that fell over her shoulder, it contrasted sharply against the crimson of her robes, official robes that she wore for the show that would commence shortly. She would cover her hair for this, as no elder would expose themselves in such a way before the Formangi. She looked frail, nearly swallowed by the folds of cloth. She was near the end of her span. He swallowed. The elders were his mothers and fathers, his family. It was never easy to lose family. Her head tilted, and a hint of warmth entered her expression, softening her features.
You did well, Guard Levi.
His stomach tightened.
No, I did not.
He didn't want to explain, but no, he had not done well. If he had done well, he would have found the crystals long before the Zaynar family used them, and Philip would have never become whatever he now was. He was nothing Levi had seen or even heard tales of, a Plinar, a crystal being, caught on the cusp of being born. And I would never have met Blue or Mawata or the others, or been shown a life beyond that of being a guard, another kind of family.
You did well, Guard Levi, to bring to heal a boy on the verge of becoming a monster.
He held his silence. He would allow them to think what they would. But he knew he could have done better, could have been quicker or more clever, or taken more risks in tracking Itu and the stolen crystals of Chardon.
How is the boy?
There was a well-warranted caution in her tone, though her expression didn't change. How to answer?
He is as well as can be expected. The Teramen seems to have halted the progression of the crystal, for now.
The bond is still there, but muffled, and barring one near incident at the inn, he is even docile.
When handled correctly.
That was true. As long as Blue was with him and the others stayed out of physical contact with her, he was fairly easy to manage. She seemed able to talk him down from his cravings and bring him back to reality when he wandered in his mind. He was like a capricious toddler, almost, except when this one threw a tantrum, people died. The game had become avoiding that tantrum.
This is very good. We may be able to bring this under control. Of course, the young man will never be the same, but we can hope to avoid another Chardon.
She did not continue,
and the silence stretched between them. "May I ask a question of you?" Levi finally said.
"You may."
"Why this farce? This reception with the Alliance and the Padilrian representatives. Philip is a criminal. Allowing him this opportunity..."
"I thought you said he was stable."
She raised a brow, and her shoulders tensed. "As stable as he could be, but he is being treated like
an honored guest. The situation is delicate, Guard Levi. As a guard, I would not expect you to comprehend all the subtleties. There is, of course, a factor of perception. We had to push for his presence hard. Too many wanted to acquire him for themselves. Oh, many said it was to punish, but we cannot trust the Firmangi. As you are aware, they would have taken advantage of the situation, twisted the boy more, until he really could not have been stopped. Or they would have allowed him to continue unchecked, as they did before you were able to apprehend him. By casting him as a guest rather than a criminal, we can also divert attention from the Plynar crystals." He held his protests, for he could not change anything with them. The arrangements with the Alliance were done and set in motion, and he would not change the Elder's view of the Firmangi. Though he had once thought similarly, the peoples of the worlds of the Alliance were much more than the Chief Elder and all of the Prizzoli thought them to be. There were good men out there, good women, in addition to the corrupt. It could not be denied, though, that the best course of action at this point was to ensure Philip and his crystal, his Plynar, were cleansed. Bricka's sacrifice was a remarkable artifact. Even he had been able to sense the comfort and peace that radiated from the crystal. But the reality was they were pinning everything on a legend, and until Philip was cleansed... "The situation with the girl is even more nuanced," the Chief Elder continued after a moment. Her sharp gaze never left Levi's face. Studying him, he knew, and looking for any indication that he may have been corrupted by his time among the Firmangi. "She is not a criminal in any way. Some were hailing her a hero for her part in the boy's capture, yet she will be treated in the same manner. You understand why?" He swallowed. The elders held her as insurance against Philip. If the cleansing did not work, she was their method to check the monster. The idea made him sick. "Do you understand why, Guard Levi?" she asked again when he didn't reply. His stomach tightened, but he was careful to keep his face blank. "I understand, but I do not have to agree." "Will she be a problem?"
"She's here." Her lips thinned.
"That is not what I meant, Guard Levi, as you know."
She sat back into her chair.
"Will she be a problem?"
"No." Duty compelled him to continue. "No, she will not cause any problems. Others might." She inclined her head.
"The barbarian and the mercenary and the criminal."
Her lip curled into a slight sneer. Levi couldn't hold back his sigh. He'd known this was coming. He had promised to protect Blue, but it was not so simple as that. He still had a loyalty to his people, and he had a loyalty to his family. "They're good people," he finally said. "Well, most of them are. They simply seek a resolution that ends well for all of us." She said nothing, but a heaviness entered the air. "They are not the enemy," he said. She raised a brow.
"Any who would pursue our secrets or ally themselves with those same people is, by definition, an enemy."
His hands curled into fists, and her gaze dropped, following the movement.
"You disagree?"
"The situation is not as it was. There can no longer be us and them. It is too late for that. Do you not see? It is too late." He took a breath and calmed himself. "The time for isolation is past us. It worked when there was nowhere for the criminals and dissidents to run but to the Firmangi. Now, with the Alliance, there is a whole universe." "Enough!" She stiffened in her chair.
"Since when has a guard argued with an elder?"
Levi looked down, shamed. No, a guard did not argue with an elder. They might disagree and formally petition an edict to be changed, but they did not argue.
Guard Levi, she said.
Her voice softened once more. She waited until he looked back up and met her eyes.
You did well. It is never easy to deal with the unclean. However, it is time to set these other worlds aside. When we reach Lianca, you will spend a full 8 days in meditation to cleanse your mind.
She rose from her seat and crossed to where he still knelt on the cushion. Laying a hand on his shoulder, she continued,
We all need to be strong of mind for what is to come. In truth, the fight has only just begun.
She pulled up her hood and wound the wrap portion around her neck, ensuring none of the snowy white of her hair was visible. Once that was done, she swept past him and to the door, but paused with her hand on the lever.
We have granted the request of her companions to accompany her and the boy to Lianca. They will all be given quarters in the guest district. It is the best I can do.
She exited, no doubt to seek out the elders who had accompanied her to the Padilrian embassy and finish preparing for the reception. Levi stayed in place, her words echoing in his mind. She was correct. The fight had only just begun. For though he could no longer sense Philip or his crystal, there was something in the air, something he could not pinpoint, something holding shades of evil. Jason couldn't rest. After the counselor had directed him to this room, Jason had quickly changed into his uniform for the reception, black and armored to match the mercenaries. All those accompanying Blue had decided beforehand to present a united front. Well, the men had coordinated. Blue was still out of the loop and would have to remain that way until they figured out a way she could communicate with them without rousing Philip's suspicions. If she were further along in her common, knew the written portion of the language, it would have been easier to manage. Trayvon had hinted he was working on something, but it wasn't quite ready yet. He had taken a leave of absence from his post as an agent until everything was sorted out with Blue. His argument had been sound. He was too close to the situation and couldn't act in the best interests of the ministry in this. His handler had agreed. So, Jason was here on his own. His official title was liaison and bodyguard for Blue Faust, a newly discovered citizen of Karan and potential portal user. The ministry hadn't been able to ignore these facts, despite the desire to maintain advantageous trade relations with Padilra. The Faust name had too much influence. Sinking down into the chair next to a side table, he slumped back, mind racing, then drifting back to that call he needed to make, the one he'd avoided until this morning. The benefit to Blue would be minimal, but there could be some. And putting it off because he himself didn't want to face the person on the other end wasn't fair. He didn't want to make the call, to speak to Rachel's parents. He didn't want to listen to the congratulations on solving the kidnapping mystery or questions on what the Alliance and Ministry were doing to bring the killers to justice. He didn't want to hear about how much they still missed their daughter and how they were grateful to him for checking in. The original kidnappings had been solved a couple months ago. All the culprits were dead or had been apprehended, barring Trayvon. The new family head had played a small part in those deaths, true, but an even larger part in stopping the whole operation. And Philip, well, he hadn't been the one to kill Rachel. That had probably been E2. Philip had always had the potential to become this monster. There was something inherently weak in the boy's mind. His impulse control was non-existent, and he saw no issues with bending the truth to gain what he wanted. Jason had known that, had seen it in him even before the incident in the locker room. And he had tried to stay out of it as much as possible, but he'd liked Kevin and hadn't wanted his new friend tainted by his association with Philip. Just as Jason had liked Blue, still liked Blue. He couldn't see her brought down by a whining child who had managed to gain unimaginable power and was as stable as a car teetering on a cliff's edge. He picked up his comm. No more time to delay. Jason?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?